Hello, and welcome back to the Ocean Matters podcast. Today I'm going to do something a bit different. I personally loved hearing of stories and tales of the seas and history. And I found someone who has spent a precious amount of time mapping things out when it comes to Homer. I loved it. It so happens that yesterday I was watching on YouTube a small TV series from some retro thing that I happened to stumble on, I'd never heard of before. But it was a crime story, as that crime story was happening, they had found a body in one part of the ocean, and they were trying to understand, because according to the coroner, I believe it's the coroner, right? The person had fallen into the sea 24 hours before, and they are in different parts of the Mediterranean, and they bring in an oceanographer, and the oceanographer says, for that body to be in that state at that time, it would have to be in this location, and in this location, there are no real tides. It's all largely dependent on wind, contrary to the location that was close to, I believe, Portsmouth, where tides are very important and winds are secondary. And he basically just goes on and sharing knowledge, and I won't bore you with the story, but I just find that way of tracking movements of the ocean and currents and so on to be fascinating. And historically, to map things in such a way, to use bits and stories and replace them. Today we look at currents and so on, and we look at, you know, vis-a-vis of climate change. How is the Arctic and the Antarctic serving as a showcase? I've gone over that, and I'll go over it again as new articles come out and so on. But this one is about if you've studied at some point, you've come across the Aeneid by Virgil, and if not, you've stumbled on Homer's Odysseus. And as I say that, you know, depending on what you studied, you've had to put up with a lot of it. But if not the case, you've definitely, hopefully, you will find this entertaining, unusual, and it probably instigates some curiosity. I found this in the Greek Reporter, and the title of Where Did Odysseus Really Travel To in Homer's Odyssey? All right. It was authored by Caleb Howells a few days ago, May 2024. In the 7th century BCE, the Greek poet Homer wrote the Odyssey. This fascinating tale of adventure and loss would captivate readers for centuries, even millennia. It tells the story of Odysseus attempting to travel home after the Trojan War. One of the most intriguing things about this lengthy poem is that there is significant controversy surrounding the locations mentioned throughout. Based on the best available evidence, where did Odysseus really travel to in the Odyssey? The most common belief is that the Odyssey takes place over a very large area. After all, this seems logical at first. Odysseus takes a full 10 years to return home after the Trojan War. Taking the normal route from Troy in northwest Anatolia to Odysseus' home island of Ithaca should have only taken a few weeks at most. For this reason, many people today believe Odysseus must have traveled all over the Mediterranean. In fact, this belief goes back to ancient times. For example, the common belief concerning Scylla and Charybdis was that they lived on either side of the Strait of Messina. In fact, certain ancient writers suggested the Odyssey is set across an even wider area than that, claiming that some of the locations were outside the Mediterranean. For example, some writers argued that Calypso's island, Ogygia, should be identified with one of the islands of the British Isles. In addition to the fact that the journey in the Odyssey took a long time, there is a more specific reason as to why many researchers today believe Odysseus must have traveled throughout the Mediterranean. Odysseus' journey starts off perfectly normally. The locations that appear obviously correspond with actual locations along the coast of the Aegean Sea between Troy and Greece. However, things take a turn for the worse and the unusual when the hero gets to Cape Maleus. This is the eastern headland in the southernmost part of Greece, forming one side of the Gulf of Laconia. It is notorious for its strong winds. As Odysseus attempts to round the cape, a strong wind blows him off course in a southerly direction for 9 days straight. Based on estimates concerning how far such an ancient Greek ship would go in a similar situation, many scholars have concluded that Odysseus must have traveled at least 630 miles from Cape Maleus. The problem is that the Mediterranean is not 630 miles from north to south at that point. In theory, then, this means that Odysseus simply cannot have been blown directly south. Rather, the wind must have blown him off course in a southwesterly direction along part of the length of the Mediterranean. This would take him to the coast of Africa, far west of Egypt, perhaps, to Tunisia. However, there is an important reason to challenge this assumption. As the late historian, sailor and explorer Tim Severin pointed out, any reasonable interpretation of the Odyssey must be that Odysseus was trying to get home. This is the entire point of the story, after all. In such a situation, that would be that he would logically have done while being blown off course. Would he have merely allowed the wind to carry him, or would he have steered the ships into the wind to try to hold his position as much as possible until the wind abated? The latter is obviously more logical. This being the case, there is no reason to conclude that Odysseus was blown significantly to the west. 9 days of a wind driving him to the south, with him fighting against it during those 9 days, would give a likely total distance of just 270 miles or so. This would mean that Odysseus would have reached the coast of Africa much further east than Tunisia. In fact, his fleet likely would have arrived more or less at the site of the later Greek colony of Cyrene. This is essentially directly south of Greece. Thus, as Odysseus continued on his journey home, he would logically have travelled directly north, likely stopping off at Crete on the way. In line with this conclusion, Severin highlighted evidence that the setting of almost all the subsequent locations that appear in the Odyssey is to be found close to Greece. For example, the next location in the Odyssey is the island of the Cyclopes. If Severin's argument is correct, that would be Crete. As it happens, Greek mythology regularly associated Crete with the Telchines. This mythical race was similar to the Cyclopes in many ways, and was sometimes conflated or confused with them. Furthermore, Severin recorded the presence of local folklore on Crete about a monstrous race that lived in caves, ate people, and had an eye on their forehead. Severin went on to demonstrate that most of the other locations were places on the coast of Greece itself. For example, the Odyssey describes a small, round harbour in the shape of a horseshoe. It had an entrance so narrow that men with long spears could block it. A cliff that face surrounded the small harbour, allowing men to stand on the edge and throw rocks onto the ships below. Severin stated that in all his years of sailing, he had never seen a location that matched such a description. However, he then found it on the coast of Greece, at the unique and fascinating harbour of Mesapos on Cape Tenerum. Another example is the entrance to the underworld. Homer explains in the Odyssey how Odysseus went down into the underworld through an entrance by the Acheron River. The Acheron River is in Thesprotia, a region in northwestern Greece. Here, in ancient times, there was an oracle of the dead, closely matching Homer's description. In conclusion, a good argument can be made that the Odyssey did not tell the story of Odysseus traveling all over the Mediterranean. Rather, with the arguments made by Severin, we see a far more logical scenario emerging. Odysseus eventually had his adventures fairly close to Greece, where the locations in the story can be convincingly placed. There we have it. I hope you enjoyed this. I hope you enjoyed this, and next time when you hear of Homer and Odysseus, you will recognize it as it has been used as themes for many, many stories, and you can find it throughout literature and art in many, many ways and more. I hope you have enjoyed this. I know it's a bit of a departure of what I've usually been recording, but all the same, if it starts something new, it's a good start. Thank you very much for listening. This was the Ocean Matters Podcast.